call the docket.
Linda Lee Alexander against David Cobb. Robert John Teske, the appellant. Felicity A. Michelson, George Kennedy Bowman for the appellate.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. Robert Test on behalf of Linda Alexander. If it pleases the court, we're here on the appeal of an order from Judge Wexler in the Bath County, Highland County combined case. This case really has two elements or two levels that I want to emphasize to the court. The first pertains to the will of George Cobb, where he left property to his wife, Dorothy, with a life estate, remaining interest to their two children, Linda Alexander, my client, and her brother, David Cobb. The will allowed that Dorothy could transfer or sell the property that she inherited, provided she adhere to the requirements of the will. Invest the proceeds from the sale of the property in an account identified as the life estate remainder interest, so that transformed from realty to personalty, the remainders would still get the funds that were left. This was done to allow her to provide for needs during the course of her life. She died in 2017. She was born at the end of the war, the first war. She was 100 years old when she died. With that background, in 2009, Linda Alexander acquired from Dorothy the property in Bath and Highland Counties. David Cobb objected to the transfer, and the case was heard by Judge Kemmler in the Alexandria City Court. Judge Kemmler ruled initially that Dorothy did have the right to transfer the property, to sell it in fee simple. But what she did was sell it to Linda Alexander for a promissory note. Judge Kemmler ruled subsequently that reversed her ruling and said, no, the promissory note does not meet the terms of the will. And she voided the transfers. Subsequently, the properties were transferred again. I was not a part of that transaction, but can only speak from the record as I've seen it. The Dorothy Cobb, at the time alive, and Linda Alexander filed a motion for declaratory judgment in Bath and Highland Counties seeking to ratify the subsequent or second sale of the property. David Cobb, by counsel, objected, filed a motion, special plea, and alleged collateral estoppel, saying, Judge Kemmler has ruled already on this matter. There is no need to have anything further done. Judge Kemmler has ruled that Dorothy Cobb may not transfer the property. Judge Franklin entered the order in that case following a commissioner's hearing. And I would point out to the court that at every step of this litigation, every pleading has contained the language of George Cobb's will and acknowledged Dorothy's ability to sell the property as long as she followed the terms of the will.
Counsel, was the Kemmler order or the Franklin order, was either one of those appealed?
No.
Well, then what preclusive effect, if any, do you attribute to either of those orders?
We believe Judge Kemmler's order was a final order. It recites the terms of George Cobb's will, states with clarity what Dorothy Cobb could and could not do, or did and did not do in that circumstance. And we were in agreement, and I believe David Cobb's counsel at the time was in agreement, that that order spoke for itself. The initial transfer was improperly done, and Judge Kemmler's order specifically voided the transfers.
But Judge Franklin apparently disagreed with that interpretation.
Well, when it got to Judge Franklin, it was on a matter of declaratory judgment, which he denied, saying the collateral estoppel applied. Judge Kemmler's order was the order of the case. As our position is, the law of the case. He did not void the deeds of 2012.
Why did he need to? He issued a declaration that everyone had to follow.
Because the motion for declaratory judgment was not allowed to proceed because Judge Franklin ruled that the parties were collaterally estopped to litigate the matter. Subsequently, when Dorothy Cobb died, the matter was then taken up in Bath County by Judge Wexler. And at the hearing on the matter, Judge Wexler said, and it's in the transcript, I don't know who owns the property. Judge Franklin's order does not say that as a result of this transaction, the parties are now aligned in a different way as to their ownership. Judge Wexler stated that he had to go into the record, review all the documents he could find to interpret Judge Franklin's order and determine what it meant. Subsequently, Judge Wexler ordered, after stating that his pretrial order was, the first thing we're going to do is determine who the owners of this property are. So clearly, there was a gap in that information being provided. Judge Wexler then determined that, as the judge's court has said, why didn't Judge Franklin agree with you on the matter of declaratory judgment? And I was not counsel in the case. I can't speak to what transpired. All I can do is look at the orders. And the court lives by its orders. And the order says, because of the rule of collateral estoppel that I find is applied here, Judge Kimmler's order it prevails. We're not going to litigate this again. It's been done in the Alexandria Circuit Court. It wasn't until Judge Wexler's order was entered determining the percentage ownership that my clients actually were divested of title.
But wouldn't that be the natural consequence if Judge Franklin interpreted Kimmler's order the way he did?
Judge, it would have been had he done as Judge Kimmler did and said, and I void these transactions. From 2012, when those deeds were executed, and the deeds on their face state, life estate being conveyed, until Judge Wexler's order, they remained in full title of the properties.
But the interpretation Franklin gave to the Kimmler order, maybe he didn't fire all of his rounds, but the interpretation was clear. He interpreted it differently than you interpreted it.
But, I don't know that he interpreted it. He said, collateral estoppel applies. This case has been ruled on in the city of Alexandria. We're not going to rule on it again. And so we're back to square one with the Kimmler order, which I submit is the law of the case because everyone keeps deferring to it. And all the pleadings and everything that's been put before the court. And again, I was not part of those 2012-2015 transactions, but it's pretty clear that that's what has happened.
Is it fair or unfair to say that Judge Kimmler believed that the deed of gift could not transfer the wife's life estate? Could only transfer the wife's life estate?
As long she could, she never had more than a life estate.
Right.
We've stipulated. She could, however, change the property in which she held a life estate from realty to personalty, as long as she invested those funds as stated in George Cobb's will. Judge Kimmler found that a promissory note in 2009 was not sufficient to meet the terms of the will. And as I said, she voided those transfers. Judge Franklin said, I find that collateral estoppel applies. Judge Kimmler's order has stated what can and cannot be done, and I'm dismissing the case. So, dismiss the case, but it wasn't an affirmative, I'm going to find the title, you have title. He didn't say, not only do I find that you don't have title, I'm taking title away from you. I'm voiding this transaction. That did not happen. So, there was nothing to appeal, nothing to argue until Judge Wexler said 75% to Linda Alexander, 25% to David Cobb, at which point we noted our exception.
Is there a distinction between the Franklin order and the Kimmler order? It seemed to me the Kimmler order said she could sell everything, the life estate, the remainder, as long as she rolled it back into the property. It seems to me Judge Franklin, adopting the commissioner's report, took the position she could only sell the life estate and really could not convey the remainder with that.
Which is accurate because we wind up kind of in freshman law school class. If I say all you have is a life estate, you can't transfer the property unless the remainder men join in. However, if it's a life estate coupled with full power of sale, then I have to follow the terms of the will that gave me that property with full power of sale. And when I get the proceeds, I have to invest them in an account that's labeled life estate, remainder interest to the two beneficiaries, which she did not do.
And Judge Franklin did not seem to interpret the will in that fashion. He seemed to disagree with the final conclusion of Judge Kimmler.
He may have, but that's the supposition is, because you did not grant my declaratory judgment request, you must have felt that I'm not entitled to it for some reason. But that's unsaid. And because...
Wait a minute. Coming so he denied your declaratory judgment action, and you can't infer from that he disagreed with your declaratory judgment action? What other basis would he have for denying it if he didn't believe it?
Because David Cobb's counsel said collateral estoppel applies. Judge Kimmler has ruled we don't need to do this again. There was no definitive ruling that the transfers were fraudulent, that there was anything other than this is now before my court, but it shouldn't be.
But the problem, it seems to me, is that you all disagree with what the collateral estoppel effect of Judge Kimmler's order was. You interpret it one way. Judge Franklin and opposing counsel and their client interpret it another way. And to the extent that Judge Franklin's order was not appealed, then his interpretation seems to govern this proceeding. What am I missing?
The point is that I don't see in Judge Franklin's order an interpretation. I see a statement of fact. I'm granting your motion for collateral estoppel because Judge Kimmler has ruled. And this has already been decided. That essentially is what he said, but he didn't then say, and as a result, here's what's happened. I'm taking title away.
Well, wait a minute. Linda Lee Alexander filed a deck action, right? So he's dismissing the deck action. He's not going to make up a counterclaim for the other side.
I agree, Your Honor. He dismissed the motion for declaratory judgment in terms of the property that Linda had brought.
On the merits with prejudice?
But he did so based on the plea of collateral estoppel of David Cobb.
But why would he go further under your logic and say, and I'm just going to sua sponte issue a quiet title order divesting these various purchasers? I mean, you're saying that's the big problem here, is he didn't go all the way. Well, no one was asking him to go all the way. He was only asked, I think, correct me if I got my procedure wrong here, he was asked by Alexander to declare something in her favor, and he said, I don't agree with it. I'm dismissing it with prejudice. So
citing,
that's all he needed to do.
Citing and using the argument of collateral estoppel raised by the defendant as the reason therefore, because it's already been determined. He wasn't determining a new case on its merits, as I read his order. Now, others may look at that differently, but if the court lives by its orders, and we're looking at the orders as Judge Wexler did and said, I wish somebody had said who the owners of this property are. He had to go back through the record and come up with this and just basically said, you know, this is where we are. And I'm not going to overrule Judge Franklin. And now I find that it's 75%, 25%. when, again, I think Judge Franklin's order didn't divest Linda of her title. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just to get the record straight, there is a judge in those parts named Wexler. The judge in this case is Wetzel.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Honorable Justices of the Court. May it please the Court. My name is Melissa Michelson, and this is my co-counsel, Josh Everard. And we represent the appellee, David Cobb, who is also in the courtroom today. This case is not about George Cobb's will or the interpretation of George Cobb's will. That would have been an issue before this honorable court had appellant appealed Judge Franklin's ruling. This case is about what happens when a litigant fails to appeal a final judgment which actually litigates an issue that becomes dispositive of a later action. This case between a brother and sister originally started out as a dispute over ownership of three parcels of properties and left to them by their parents and through their mother's and father's wills, which through a series of three separate lawsuits has now transformed into a legal question as to the finality of judgments and the preclusive effect of those judgments on subsequent actions. The appellant urges that the court find that lawsuit one before Judge Kemmler has preclusive effect on lawsuit three, the subject of this appeal before trial court and Judge Wetzel. Appellee submits that under the well-established principles of this court, lawsuit one can have no preclusive effect on lawsuit three. Rather, lawsuit two, before Judge Franklin, has a preclusive effect on lawsuit three. The only circumstances in which a litigant can attempt to avoid finality in our system are either when the judgment is void ab initio, which is not relevant here, or the judgment is appealed to a higher court with competent jurisdiction to review the lower decision. Beyond those circumstances, the relationship of that first judgment to any later proceedings hinges on the former's preclusive effect. The issue to be reviewed here is not whether the prior final judgment of Judge Franklin is correct. The issue is, and the question to be answered by the court, is what effect does those prior proceedings have on the case on appeal today?
So whether or not Judge Franklin correctly applied res judicata to the Kimmler order, his application, error or not, is entitled to res judicata itself.
That's correct, Your Honor. This court comments in Miller Jenkins v. Miller Jenkins, I believe, is very instructive on that point. In Miller Jenkins, the court stated that when there are two appeals in the same case, between the same parties and the facts are the same, nothing decided on the first appeal can be re-examined on the second appeal. Right or wrong, it is binding on both the trial court and the appellate court and is not subject to re-examination by either, which I submit is the law that Judge Wetzel correctly followed and applied to the third lawsuit.
Not exactly. That's law of the case doctrine as opposed to...
It's analogous, Your Honor, I believe. Because the final judgments entered in lawsuits 1 and 2 were not timely appealed and are subject to no exceptions, this court does not possess the requisite jurisdiction to review the decisions made in those cases on this appeal.
Hey, counsel, I understood your opposing counsel's argument to be not to dispute those general principles, but to go to what Judge Franklin actually did. And so could you help us address that? Was that ruling truly controlling and dispositive as to the third lawsuit?
Yes, Your Honor, I submit that it is. Judge Franklin expressly stated, as cited by Judge Wetzel, that Dorothy Cobb could not transform a life estate interest into a conveyance by fee simple. If she sold her life estate, that's all she sold. And when she passed, that sale diminished. The appellant had filed the declaratory judgment action, requested the court construe George Cobb's will, and quiet title in appellant's name only. She sought the relief requesting that the court say, I am 100% ownership of these properties. The mother had already gifted her 50% of the properties to appellant. So there's no dispute that appellant owns at least 50%. So the dispute is about how does you divide up the remaining 50%. Appellant asked Judge Franklin to find, I own all of that 50%, therefore I own 100% of the properties, and the appellee owns none. Judge Franklin refused to acquire title to her and said that no, all you purchased was a life estate, not the remainder, and that was further developed in the commissioner's report, Commissioner Collier's report, which was incorporated into Judge Franklin's order. So there, I submit that, as Judge Wessel correctly found, there's no other conclusion that the court could reach when Judge Franklin dismissed appellant's quiet title claim, refused the quiet title in her name solely, that the only logical conclusion left to be, and it was referenced in the commissioner's report, that Mr. Cabo's 25%, Ms. Alexander owns 75%. And we submit that lawsuit one can have no preclusive effect on lawsuit three because claim preclusion doesn't apply, as the appellant was not successful in lawsuit one. Issue preclusion doesn't apply, as the same issues were not involved. Judge Kemmler determined that the 2009 deeds of gift were void. Her comments upon Mr. Test's questions as to, well, what if we did it a different way in the future, I submit are irrelevant, as that question was not before the court. It was a fraudulent conveyance action. It was not a quiet title. It was not a determination of ownership or a declaratory action. So I think that they were maybe comments by Judge Kemmler that had no jurisdiction.
And Justice Kelsey's point was, you may be right about that, but you don't need to run the table. You just need to have the preclusive effect from Judge Franklin's order, and then it's game over, whether or not it was consistent
Correct.
With Judge Kemmler's.
Correct, Your Honor.
But I understand it's good to run the table if you can.
And in 2007, this court held Hughes v. Doe that to have that preclusive effect, a judgment need not be on the merits. As this was a collateral estoppel argument, there was no determination on the merits. But the same issues were actually litigated in the matter before Judge Franklin, i.e. the ownership of the properties, whether it was 75-25 or 100% and zero, and the same causes of action, the validity and interpretation of the 2012 deeds of bargain and sale. I respectfully disagree with appellant's counsel, Mr. Test, that the parties acknowledged Dorothy Cobb's right to sell the remainder. I submit that that was the whole basis of the lawsuit in front of Judge Franklin. Appellee did not agree that his mother had the right to sell the life estate as the remainder and in fee simple. And that's what we requested Judge Franklin to find, and Judge Franklin did so find. Judge Franklin specifically ruled that Dorothy Cobb did not have the right to transform a life estate into a conveyance by fee simple, and therefore he refused to quiet title. Again, Miller v. Jenkins versus Miller v. Jenkins is instructive, where the court says when a party fails to challenge a decision rendered by a court at one stage of the litigation, that party is deemed to have waived her right to challenge that decision during later stages of the same litigation. The court further stated that it has never limited the law of the case doctrine to litigation that occurs in a sequential fashion under one set of pleadings. Therefore, I submit that analysis, that concept, is applicable to the appeal before the court today. Based on Judge Franklin's ruling, appellee filed lawsuit three, seeking a partition of the properties, and a trial was heard before Judge Wetzel. Appellant again renewed her claim that she owned 100% of the properties. Judge Wetzel denied appellant's motion, correctly citing Judge Franklin's final order and interpreting the ownership not to be 100% in appellant, as Judge Franklin refused to quiet title in her name solely, but 75% in appellant and 25% in appellee based on Judge Franklin's order and the commissioner's report incorporated therein. We submit that Judge Wetzel did not err, and he correctly refused appellant the opportunity to relitigate the issue of her claimed 100% ownership of the properties, which was an issue that was already adjudicated by Judge Franklin and was not appealed. The time for appellants to have appealed the issue as to her 100% claimed ownership of the property was Judge Franklin's order. And if she failed to properly and timely file an appeal of Judge Franklin's order, she's now barred. That has become the final law of the case and is not allowed years later to say, well, let's go back to Judge Franklin's order and really bypass Judge Franklin and skip that everything that happened with Judge Franklin and go back to what Judge Kemmler said. The opportunity to do that was in 2015 when Judge Franklin issued his order. A fundamental concept in any system of rule of law is the finality of judgments. I set forth in Rule 1:1 of the Rules of the Supreme Court of Virginia. This concept arises from deeply rooted values of stability, consistency, and predictability. Simply put, the law affords appellee Mr. Cobb the right to rely on Judge Franklin's decision as it was not timely appealed. Because the law prevents appellant from relitigating that same issue that was already determined by Judge Franklin as correctly cited by Judge Wetzel, appellee respectfully requests that the trial court's final judgment be affirmed and that this matter be remanded back to the trial court to proceed with the partition of the properties by sale as ordered by Judge Wetzel. Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 11 seconds remaining if you'd like to use it for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I only have one point to make, and that is under the terms of the will, Dorothy could only sell her life estate. That's all she ever had to sell, but she could transform it. Thank you.
Call the next case.